It's Wednesday, June 6, 2007, and you're listening to episode 55 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 55 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan, and on the mics with me today is John.
Hey.
Chad.
Howdy.
Adam.
Hi.
And Mike.
Howdy.
Hopefully this is the last time that we will have to do these introductions, because last episode, I was all proud that I had finally figured out the compressor and our sound quality was going to be so much better and blah, blah, blah. And of course, just like the story we were telling about, you know, saying I've never locked my keys in my car, and then I locked my keys in my car, I go bragging about the compressor, and then we start getting complaints for the first time in the entire history of this show about our sound quality. Yeah. So I messed with them again, and that didn't quite work either.
Yeah, I was going to say, the one thing that you did different this time, instead of turning off auto and messing with the dials, you turned auto back on.
I turned auto back on, and I tried backing down the expander gate or whatever it's called a little bit. So
that one knobby thing with the light above it.
The expander gate. That's so Cthulhu.
So hopefully...
Or Nixon, perhaps.
Hopefully our sound quality will be back, and if it's not, I apologize, you're stuck with it for two episodes, because we are doing a double-header recording tonight. So if we have any more sound quality problems, you will not hear an improvement until three episodes from now. So tough it out, and you'll be just fine, I promise.
Stiff upper lip, or ear, or whatever.
Now, let us introduce unto you...
Oh. The genius that has been wrought from our collective mind.
Now, don't you all wish we had sound effects for this?
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm telling you, I need my wacky morning sound effect board. Continue, Dan.
If you had a sound effect board, this is the sound effect I would be looking for. The one that contains the sound of brilliance being ejected from a birth canal. Because that is exactly...
I was thinking...
So this could be the aborted fetus of intellect if we mess it up?
That could be wet and sticky.
I had timpanis in mind, but we can do concussive birth canal projectiles too.
Excellent. Well, here's what we came up with. You see, we decided that sports people have their whole March Madness thing with the basketball and the gambling and all the things that go into that.
And the sweat and the butt padding and the...
Exactly. And Fear the Boot doesn't have anything like that.
Well, we do have the butt padding.
And the sweat. And the gambling. Now, so basically, we don't have basketball.
Last week, we also talked about the Power 19, yet some kind of vertical dyslexia kicked in. We saw that as the Power 16. Thought about basketball and butt padding and sweating and ejections from birth canals. And out of this came the Fear the Boot Power 16. We have come up with the 16 most powerful icons of Fear the Boot.
But you know what? Just one thing, just one Power 16 wasn't enough for us. We had to rend it in two.
Yes, we have rend it into two. We came up with 16 powerful icons of Fear the Boot, and we have organized them into two separate divisions, the Shadowrun League and the Rifts League.
I don't know which one to vote for.
Well,
they're both awful.
Let me tell you what's in each. In the Shadowrun League, we have the Well Giant, the Menstruo Zombies, the Demon Gnome with the Magic Staff.
You said it wrong.
I'm sorry.
I'm a demon gnome with a magic staff.
The
dominance.
The Aarakocra. Don Shadowrun, inventor of Shadowrun himself. Phil. Kane. And Baron Von Badass.
Kane, you better clarify the Kane. There's
Kane
so
from
many
Command and Conquer.
Right.
Not the one that killed Abel, the one that killed all of the GDI.
Right, and not also the one from Vampire the Masquerade. We were talking about the man who sports both bald and beard.
Why did you say, and Nod, the one from...
Nod, the one from... Over in the Rifts League, we have Hardgay, the Sexual Care Bears.
That's going to be a hell of a matchup.
Batman. Mr. Body Massage Machine.
I can't even participate in this anymore. I can't handle that matchup. It's too powerful.
Vin Diesel, Bill Cosby, Christopher Walken, and the Hardvark. Now, here's the way this is going to work. we are going to post up on the website little spots where you guys can come in and vote. You guys are going to look at these matchups, and you are going to vote between the two on each of these matchups and pick a winner. And we are going to bracket this down to one final matchup, the winner of which we will announce at Gen Con. Now, because we are recording these episodes a week ahead, you are going to get the vote replies a week after the voting ends. So the first round of voting, in which we are going to have four matchups, which you will see on the website, is going to start when this episode releases on June the 6th. Your votes must be in by June 11th, by about 5 or 6 o'clock Central Time, because that's when we're going to get together to record what will be the third episode from now. So once again, votes start as soon as this episode drops. They will end about 5 or 6 o'clock p.m. Central Time on Monday, June 11th. To find the spot to vote, all you have to do is go to feartheboot.com/power16. That's just power 16, no spaces. You don't need to spell the numbers out. And we will also have a link somewhere at the top of our entry page that will go directly to this voting booth. So you need to get in there and vote about who's going to win in this first bracket. And your matchups are going to be the Well Giant versus the Menstrua Zombies, the Demon Gnome with the Magic Staff.
There you go.
Versus the Aarakocra, Hard Gay versus the Sexual Care Bears, and Batman versus Mr. Body Massage Machine. And I'll tell you right now, that is the match to watch.
Oh, man. I can't even believe they made it in the first round.
Now, if you don't know who any of these are, you've not been following the show for very long, or you have, but you just don't remember the jokes, we will try to post a small bio of each one that explains their importance to Fear the Boot.
We could put their combat stats up. Their power levels.
Also, get on the forums, too, if you already are or if you haven't already. And follow this. I'm going to make a thread on there where we make our own brackets, you know, March Madness style. We'll see who can who makes the best predictions. Perchance there might be some betting going on.
Yeah.
Perchance not.
I do have a gambling problem.
If you want to start some kind of gambling pool about your office, this would be a great opportunity to introduce your coworkers to Fear the Boot.
And to show them. Well, never mind.
Yeah. John, you requested that in this episode we discuss embarrassing past purchases.
Well, I more proposed it in a roundtable-ish discussion regarding episode subject, but yes, it did come to mind.
Okay.
I was making a post on the forum in a thread about the new Star Wars game, and in doing so, I tried to remember the last time I bought a core rulebook that wasn't D&D, and I couldn't do it. It's been that long. Later, I sat down and admitted to myself that I bought the Dragon Ball Z RPG that came out in the late 90s. And it was as terrible as it sounds.
How many times has it been played?
A couple. I called some neighborhood friends up. We got around and rolled up Super Saiyans and stuff.
You need to run me a game.
Oh, no.
What would possibly prompt you to buy that?
Hey.
When I was 14, Dragon Ball Z was great.
You aren't friends.
Still is great.
Oh, and that was like 3 years ago, so.
Go to hell.
Now, you play this with friends around the neighborhood. I assume you're not friends anymore.
No, not at all. That killed it.
Was this game? This game was the cause of the break?
This game was the center of that.
But the fight mechanics were terrible. It was like, you could do the little Krillin Destructo Disc thing and blow through their shields, and everyone did it
Krillin
every time. No, any of your characters could do it.
Oh.
No one would actually have to play Krillin, though. That's unthinkable.
Because that's punishment from the DS.
The only minor character to play was Chaozu, because his suicide attack did massive, massive damage.
What scares me is that some people may actually be able to follow this conversation.
I can follow this conversation and more.
Well, this
was quite statistically significant enough to kill Nappa.
This coming from the man who had no insight on Quidditch leagues.
Oh, excuse me. But I don't understand how you can't play 3D Quidditch without flying brooms. Okay, Danny, I recall you buying Renegade Legion. That was pretty awful.
No, actually, that was Kevin that bought it.
Smack.
I don't think you can point out somebody else's embarrassing purchase.
I wish someone would point out one of mine, because I don't remember.
I bought Spelljammer. That was pretty
That's
horrid.
Pretty embarrassing. I bought Spelljammer, too.
Yeah.
It's my first campaign setting, though. I was just trying it out.
You know what's even worse is that you ran it for us and we played it.
See, I never ran it.
Ugh.
That's my...
Dan even liked it.
My cop-out is that I read the source books and I was like, holy crap, they're serious, aren't they? And then I put it back in my closet and it's still there.
Festering. Yes. Growing. A great evil to be unleashed upon the earth one day.
Man, I don't know if I have, per se, a game that I'm embarrassed to have bought. There are definitely some games I have regretted buying, or some books I've regretted buying. The MechWarrior Companion, couldn't stand it. Cover to cover.
What do you hate about that book?
Oh, what isn't there to hate about that
book? I don't
know.
I don't think I've ever read it.
The way that it was set up when they were first describing it was that the MechWarrior Companion was basically going to expand the role-playing setting. And they talked about how they were going to give you a better look into like what daily life is like for somebody in the universe.
They never do that.
They were going to have stuff like...
And that's the problem with BattleTech, is that the story is all about this high-level politics. It'd be like playing Tony Blair and George Bush and, you know, Putin or whatever.
Pootie-poo.
President of Russia, Pootie-poo. But the thing is, you can't play any of those characters.
Right. Well, see, and that's why when they first did the little blurbs about the upcoming MechWarrior Companion, I was so excited because, oh, finally, here's an insight into the daily life. And they talked about, like, they were going to describe things like what it costs to buy a car or what it costs to buy a meal and how they were going to really round out the role-playing game, not the universe, not the mech game, but the role-playing game. And what came out instead was basically two things. One, it was tons and tons and tons and tons of combat stats.
Of course.
And two, it's like 150-page apologetic for the cartoon. Which, for anyone that followed BattleTech, this cartoon was like a sin against God and man.
What an embarrassment.
Yeah, so it even has...
Glowing tattoos and everything.
It has stats in there for the neural tattoos.
Nice.
So... I don't know, per se, that I'm embarrassed to have picked it up because it was supposed to be something different. But
can I preempt the apology that we're going to have next episode, and can you explain more why you don't like the cartoon?
It was awful.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Enough said, yeah.
By the way, I want to apologize. We've been apologizing too much in recent episodes.
Yeah, we're really sorry we're making people complain about how sorry we are.
I think we need to go back and kind of explain why we explain things and before we apologize for apologizing.
So sorry. And that whole, Shadowrun offices blowing up, that was me. I'm sorry.
All right. Come on, rotten D&D settings. They had some great campaign settings for D&D, but man, they also had some stinkers. Somebody's here's got to own a really bad one.
I bought Al-Qaeda or whatever it was called. That was another one of the ones I got at KB or Toys R Us.
By Al-Qaeda, you mean Al-Qadim.
Yeah, whatever.
Or Al-Qaeda.
And reading the source books, it actually didn't look as bad as Spelljammer did. Not that it could have, but I still didn't get a chance to run it. That was during one of those dry periods of... You can't get a group together, so you're just going to keep buying books to vicariously enjoy the experience of gaming.
Mm-hmm.
Red Steel was pretty dreadful. Fortunately, I didn't buy it, but I did play a campaign in it.
I've heard lots of complaints about Red Steel. I've never actually looked at it. What's so terrible about it?
The setting is just retarded. Like, Steel is... we can't really back this up.
Villages full of mentally handicapped people.
We're talking like, if you roll up a character in the game, you get like a helmet and...
Like, you get the Steel short wagon. And
like, Steel is really hard to come by, and people have this weird infection or, like, illness that you have to wear this thing called Cinebril or else you're going to get sick and die. There's, like, this nation of monkey people. It's just, like, bizarre.
Actually, that sounds pretty cool.
No, it's pretty out there. It's flaky.
Yeah, speaking of retarded, we were looking at a...
Monkey people?
No, we're not looking at monkey people. There are monkey people in the MechWarrior Companion, though. Well, let me just bring that to your attention. But... And no, I'm not being facetious about that either. But getting back to retarded, Adam and I and our two wives are thinking about taking a trip in early February, or I guess actually late February of next year. And we were looking at one of the excursions... And it talks about taking a short bus ride. It's great when you can read things ambiguously.
Oh, got some bad news for you, Dan. MechWarrior Companion, I'm opening it up right here. Additional material under the writing credits. Sixth one down, Christopher Hussey.
Uh-oh.
Nice.
This is worse than breaking out somebody's sixth grade yearbook.
I bet Chris Hussey looked 40 when it is in sixth grade.
Ow.
Damn, dude.
Lately, our gaming groups have had a little bit of trouble getting and keeping games going. And so there's a subject that has been brought up that is near and dear to our heart, that I think we should spend the next little bit pontificating wildly about with our theories on how we would address this problem.
So you're saying, in our opinion.
In our
humble opinion.
Which you can translate to fact.
Yes.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
We're not going to apologize for that.
How? No, we probably will.
In two or three episodes. We're not going to apologize on this episode.
Right, because we're in a week delay.
Yeah, so, we're doing two tonight, so right. Maybe three episodes
so,
from now.
All the people we've offended with bitching about the MechWarrior Companion, the mentally handicapped, our opinions, whatever, you're going to have to wait 2 weeks to get an apology for that.
Right.
So just sit tight.
You know, this apology thing is probably the greatest thing we've ever come up with, apologizing in every episode, because we were at one point, we're like, man, we're running out of content. What do we have? We need to bulk out these episodes. I got an idea. 15 minutes of saying we're sorry.
If you think about all the things that we have said over the past 50 some odd episodes, plus bonus episodes, plus mm-hmm. interviews that have pissed at least one person off. We could spend year two just reworking year one.
Just in a sort of apology
format.
It
brings us closer, really, to the rest of the podcasting community because we finally have a segment.
we could even have bumpers.
Yeah, I'm going to get the DLI guys to make us a bumper.
There you go.
Assuming I can squeeze it into their busy housework. So anyway, getting back into gaming after a hiatus, let's say that your group, like ours, has fallen off the gaming wagon for whatever reason. You could, for example, be school, work, wives, whatever.
Raging crack addiction.
Yeah, that was a rough one to overcome. Mm. Yeah.
Actually, I think that would make you game more.
Crack? Nah, you'd be surprised. You wind up in a bathtub,
if it was
coke, curled into
game
the
more.
Sonic the Hedgehog position, trying to keep warm.
Or so you've heard, right? Gaming.
No. Don't judge, guys.
So what do you guys suggest for getting back into gaming after a hiatus? How do you get everyone back into it?
Reorganize the group.
Explain.
Build the group up from the ground up. Find out who is into it, who wants to play, who is like, oh yeah, that'd be great to game. I really miss gaming. We should do that again one day when I'm not so busy.
Well, yeah, I completely agree, and I think you've also got to look in there for the people that have a great deal of enthusiasm, mm-hmm. but won't actually back it up.
Right.
Yeah. The people like, oh yeah, I want a game, I'd love to game, I'm going to game, absolutely. And yet, everything else you're trying to get them to do, social obligations, whatever, they don't show up for, they don't mm-hmm. make it out for, they can't find time for.
Well, other social obligations be damned. There's always the, yeah, we got a game, okay, how about next Tuesday? Well, okay, next Wednesday. You know, I got this thing to do then. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Set a date.
Yeah.
They don't show up, they're not in.
We don't know anybody like that.
No, we do not.
Damn it, Phil.
I think something else you've got to be honest about is the fact that you can kind of start over, but you can never go back. That because of the fact that life has changed, because of the fact that years have gone by, your life situations have changed, your interests have changed. You are not going to rehab the same gaming experiences you did before.
Look at high school. We used to game. I mean, we would get up around noon, and then we would get together around 6, and then we would game until 11 a.m. the next morning, and then get up at noon again and keep on gaming.
Yeah, exactly.
And I get up at 7:30 every morning.
Yeah,
when I go to bed.
Foreign.
Well, and even with my other group, one of the things that we did was we would typically game on Saturdays, and we would game 8-12 hours. I mean, even recently. And so when I started gaming with your group, Chad, it was an adjustment to me to come to
4 or 5 hour game.
Yeah, except the idea of a 4 or 5 hour game, like after work. And like I said, you just got to accept that you can't go back anymore.
Yeah.
I've never played an after work game until recently, and it's a big adjustment as a player, too, because Dan, you're dealing with it from a GM perspective. But man, I feel like we're cutting it off after we just get started with these short games.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to me, 5 hours is a very, very robust session. You start pushing mm-hmm. over 4, that taxes my ability to GM over the limit.
The GM has to like really look at it too. They have to say, okay, this is going to be, the game is, you know, 4 hours, 5 hours long. It's going to end at this point. And so, you know, you have your high points that you set throughout your campaign, but you have to have your high points and cliffhangers and wrap up set for that night. I don't know. I've been in games before where the GM is like really prepared, has all their notes, has the whole thing planned out for the campaign, but can't pace a single session. And so you get there and you pick up the game, you start going, and it's just like you're in the middle of something, and it's like everybody has to stop and go home. No, you can trail out, or you can leave a nice, you know, chop it off at a really heavy cliffhanger, but nobody wants to like stop a game in the middle of a conversation or something like that. Nobody wants to stop a game necessarily in the middle of a fight, but you know, stopping a game in the middle of a bank robbery and you're robbing the bank and then you open it and then suddenly behind you, you hear freeze. Okay, I'll see you guys next week. I used to do those kind of cliffhangers all the time. My players hated me for it.
Oh, I would despise that.
Oh, I know. It was great. Everyone's like, you bastard! How could you do this to us?
And Dawn didn't vote you off of Cliffhanger Island?
Yes, Dawn voted me off of Cliffhanger Island repeatedly.
I think you've also got to do a little bit of raising and lowering. You've got to raise your effort and lower your expectations. That this is something we went through in our group where we used to have, I mean, these really intense, really deep games. We made the comment, or I made the comment in the last episode, that we used to have RP that was so heavy that we could sit there and just RP without GM intervention for some period of time. And there's a person or two on the forums that kind of took us to task saying, well, I don't know quite that I believe that. And it really did happen.
Well, when
that
you,
was me.
When you game for 18 hours straight, it's 4 o'clock in the morning and you're on your third pot of coffee, you enter a sort of trance-like state.
And your
that
GM
really
will just
helps.
Let you go for as long as you want to.
Because he's that means he can go to bed.
But I can't deny that.
And when you're IC for 6-7 hours, you get glued to your character.
Yeah, you kind of become your character.
Really? Because that sounds a whole lot like LARPing to me.
You know what? It is a little creepy, yeah.
It's not LARPing, though.
But the point being that when you then take several years off, and then you try to hop back into
well,
it.
Well, not only do you just take several years off, but you take several years off, and you get a real job, and you get a house, and you get a wife, and you get this life, and you get this rhythm to your life
right.
That isn't the random chaos of that, you know, that high school summers or college, you know, don't have a job all the time, college time. But yeah, it you have to actually work the gaming within the rhythm of your life. Unlike whereas the other times, you just drop everything.
Well, but it's just hard getting back into it because you've been out of it for so long. I mean, like anything else, you lose practice. And because of the fact that it's a social activity, you also lose some of that group synergy, excuse the buzzword. But
well, it's true. I mean, it is good role-playing is not something that five people who haven't gamed in a long time, none of them have gamed in a long time, can sit down around a table and then, boom, bust out Academy Award-winning Shakespearean performances, you know, for the first time in 5 years. It isn't going to happen.
Right.
Unless, of course, you're a professional actor, at which point, technically, you're kind of role-playing as your day job anyway.
So I think it's a two-way street. You've got to lower your expectations and just accept these games are not going to be the same and may not be as great to start with. But also, you've got to raise the effort.
Well,
because it takes a lot more focus and a lot more effort to even get a mediocre game.
Well, it takes a lot more focus and a lot more effort to get the game night and then get people there.
I think that one of the things you should do, and this is going to sound really awful and very sort of new agey, you have to change your definition of what great is. You have to lower the bar a little bit, but, you know, you have to look at it. This is great in that this is what these people can produce. People who just got off work, who have a 9-to-5 job, who may have kids, who have, you know, they're married, they have all this stuff going on in the week and all these stresses, and they bring it to the table, yet you still have fun, you still escape, you still relax. You know, personally, I don't want to go back to the 3-day-long gaming marathon sessions with the 10 pots of coffee and the shakes, and I forget what my real name is. Okay, you know, maybe that's a little bit of an extreme example there. But you know what I mean?
It never happened, by the way.
Yeah, no, it never happened. But, you know, that's one of the things. It's like, yeah, that was great when I was a kid, and that was great. But I don't want to go back to it. Right. I don't want to live that. I hope my son grows up, and I hope he goes through that, and I hope that I'm standing there at the door saying, where the hell have you been? But you know what? I don't want to go back to that. And not be even if I became a millionaire, and all my friends became millionaires, and we could do whatever we want, we didn't have to worry about this life rhythm thing of work and being off and resting, I just don't want to go back to that place again. because that was fine in the past, and now I now I'm this, and I'm happy with where I'm at.
Really, I do. I still dream of marathon landing sessions with John.
We still do marathon landing sessions from time to time.
Speaking of, we need to plan one.
Absolutely.
I can't say that I'm against the idea so much as I just don't see it happening anymore. That what it takes, the kind of energy that it takes to write that much plot and to GM and play for that long, it's just like, I don't know that I have that in me anymore, just because I have changed as a person.
Even if I did a huge rail of coke, I just, like I said, I don't want to go back to that.
Coke will not focus your attention.
Yeah. Because I think that you can have, within the shorter games that fit within our lives, I think that you can have goodness if you just look for a different kind of goodness. And again, that sounds like a really metaphysical, cheesy new age way of saying it. It's like, oh, well, you know, it's crappier than how it used to be, so you just need to change the definition so it's not crappy anymore. Now, that's not quite right. What
that's
I'm saying.
That's how I view my academic career.
and what's wrong with New Agey? I think you need to apologize.
Oh, not this episode. Two episodes from now.
Yeah. That's when we apologize to the retarded, the New Agers, the...
the cocaine addicts, since we've now had two references.
No, I have utter respect for the cocaine addicts. I mean, you have to be really focused and dedicated to generate that much income. Chad,
welcome to white-collar America.
Chad, I have utter respect for dairy farmers.
I got no beef with them.
No. Oh, this is terrible.
I have a real stake in this show.
I can't accept these puns. I'm really upset by the range of humor that's going on here.
I'm so mad. I'm about to see spots.
You guys are just prodding me on.
This is ruining the brand.
Oh, this is awful. I'm gonna go vomit.
All right. Let's get Leatherface. I don't get it. Let me steer this back on course. Oh, I'd hate to have to put Fear the Boot to pasture, so let's...
You don't want to have a cow, boy. That was lame.
Yeah, it was.
All right, let's mend fences and get back on track. So, I think something else you've got to look at is why you went on hiatus to begin with. Because in order to correct some of that, it's like, okay, even if you've got everything ready, you've got the people who are really interested, you've set reasonable expectations, you're all willing to work a little extra hard, you know, to make it happen since you're trying to get back in the swing of it. Look at why you went on hiatus in the first place, because if it was over interpersonal drama, or you couldn't agree on a game system, or someone has a nagging spouse that won't let them off the leash or whatever, if these problems aren't resolved, guess what? The game's not going to work anyway.
Yeah. Try to assess whether you ended in fire or ice last time. If there was an incident, mend fences and go on. But if people really just didn't care and just stopped showing up, make sure they want to bother again, or else you're going to sputter, just like you did last time.
You know, and it could also be not so much that people didn't care. It's just that, you know, life occurrences came up. Yeah. And in that case, you have to do the same thing. You have to see if they're still under the effect of those same life situations that they can't get out of. And you know what? You could do other things too. Instead of saying, okay, we used to game once a week and we used to game for hours and hours, well, maybe we don't have to game once a week. Maybe we can game once a month, you know, or once every 2 weeks and have a real long session.
Yeah, it's a different dynamic, but if you are the 12 hours one Saturday a month, see you later, or the 4 hours every Wednesday, it doesn't matter as long as you get into a rhythm.
And you know what? I know a lot of people who game once a month. Like, they actually sit down around a table and game once a month, and then they fill out a lot of role-playing and a lot of the side story and stuff through forum play. You know, they have a private forum.
Well, that's
forum.
Gross.
Well, no, not like a public forum with random strangers. Like they have a private forum, and they talk about the different, like my coworker at work. He has one of those things. I think they're doing it all by email, though, where they get together once a month and they have a town. They're playing a D&D game and they have a town. And the D&D game consists of their adventures where they go outside the town and to the dungeons and defeating the evil and this, that, and the other. Now, when they aren't playing through the course of the month, they talk about what they do in their town, how they expand their town and deal with people and situations that come up and that sort of thing. That's pretty interesting.
The thing that's always spooked me about a once-a-month game is
that spooky?
Yeah.
Is it Ravenloft?
It's losing the flow.
Big time.
That we have found, at least within one of my gaming groups, that we can miss one game. We try to game weekly. We can miss one game and we're okay. If we miss two in a row, the game is dead. Over.
Your mom has flow once a month.
What?
Where did that come from?
Cut that out.
Leave that in.
No, leave that in.
Huh. I think I found a new forum, Sig.
What the hell
is wrong? If we didn't just cause a car wreck, it's because we know nobody listens to us while driving.
I'm sorry, it was there.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, game lost flow.
No. Once a month, you can't keep flow.
All right.
You're done.
Oh, God.
Here, have a sexual care bear.
Thanks.
Calm it down.
Wow. Is we lose everything?
Congratulations, yeah. John. You're a once a month game.
The problem that we have is if we miss more than one game, if we miss 2 weeks, by that following sitting, no one can remember what was going on, and everyone's kind of forgotten the characters they were playing, and it's just that rhythm, and don't make any puns on that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, 2 months is a long time.
Isn't quite there. So.
You start wondering if something's up.
Well, if the expectation, though, is set to once a month, I mean... The thing is, it may not work for this group or other groups, but believe me, there are a ton of groups out there who do once a month deep role-playing
games. Well, I mean, we've even
got... enough for me.
We've gotten emails from people that literally do once a year marathon.
Yeah, they get together all weekend.
Yeah, I got an email from some guys.
That's a lot.
I've talked to people who've done that, too.
Well, their thing is they and all their buddies scattered to the four winds of the earth.
Yeah.
So once a year, they like rent out a hotel room or two and get together and do like 3 or 4 days straight of like, if you even sleep. That's all you do is you sleep and you roleplay.
Your character sleeps.
Yeah.
And you're LARPing.
You just do these massive roleplay sessions. So I understand. It's just for me personally, I can't do it. It doesn't work for me. I'd have real trouble playing in a once a month game. I guess unless it was a real low RP game. If it was like a Battletech game, sans Mech Warrior is just more kind of unit management with a minimal character.
It's not really character. Roleplay that's, game. That's tabletop it's not really wargaming.
So it'd be very hard for me to do.
I think it's doable. I don't know. I haven't done it, but
it's all
survey says it is because you
lots
know,
of people do it.
Yeah, lots of people do it. And
if
they
it's
have
regularly
fun,
done, yeah. It's doable.
But you know what? Fear the Boot doesn't do it.
That's right. It's not in our play style.
Yeah.
Same as hard-ass gaming and LARPing. We don't game once a month.
Yeah. So that means you, the listener, can't game once a month.
That's right. You right there. You're wrong.
Why don't you just go to Denny's with all the rest of your kind?
Do some Shadowrun LARPs.
With all of your kindred.
Your kinder.
Man, what is wrong with you people tonight?
I don't know.
Dude, we still have a whole other episode.
You know what's funny
this.
Is I think here's what's wrong. This is the first episode in quite a while where no one here has had a drop of alcohol.
Oh my God,
before
you're
we
right.
sat down to record.
I haven't had a drink in 2 days.
No, that's not true. I had a beer before I left work.
Did I had a margarita yesterday.
This is while you were driving here or what?
No, this was the last half hour of my day was I was drinking a beer.
Oh.
He's got one of those big twisty straws so he can keep the beer out of sight while he's driving.
He's got a little beer hat. And when a cop drives by, he just raises up in his seat a little. So.
Waves to the cop. Gentlemen.
Alrighty. Customizing your games to suit your players.
Or how to sell out.
No.
Or how to entertain player characters.
That's right.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
You
how to be
give
a good
them,
entertainer.
You give them what you want.
No, Dan,
you
why
give
don't we,
Melina zombies.
Let's define this category
day.
So the massacre can begin.
All right. Just before we let slip the dogs of war, let us explain the subject here.
That we shall apologize for next week.
When you sit down at the table to run a game, you've got a game master who obviously is generating, well, in most gaming groups, the majority of the content for the game. This varies depending on the group and the gaming style. But nonetheless, you have one or two or three or four or five or however many number of players that are sitting around that table. And it is, I think, good and proper to customize the gaming experience. And I don't just mean the game, but the gaming experience to suit the players, because ultimately, if they're not interested and they're not excited, you aren't going to have a game that's going to last real long. So my question is, how would we do that? But Chad is actually backing up a question to, should you do that?
Oh, you know, I don't really hold hard to it. I mean, you do have to find out what your players want, but it's a balance thing. You, as a GM, if you really hate a given game, like you hate D20 fantasy games, and you really, really, really have to run sci-fi, and that is your thing, and your players really, really, really have to run fantasy, I mean, you're going to have to find a compromise somewhere.
Well, at its roots,
and that's called Star Wars.
I mean, a GM is going to be doing...
I agree.
A GM is going to be doing the bulk of the work. They've got to write the plot. They've got to come up with the game. They have to enjoy what they're doing.
Yeah.
But conversely, anytime you're telling a story, you have to think about your audience.
And yeah, I mean, because if you bore your players to absolute tears and they're not having fun and they're not into the setting, well, what's the point?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I don't think that it's a vote necessarily. I think that it has to be a consensus.
Right. You try to please everyone as much as possible. And when you can't, that's when there's compromises made.
Bill Cosby says that the surest way to fail is to try to please everyone.
Well, since Bill Cosby says, and clearly he is like the pinnacle of gaming.
He is. Bill Cosby is my spiritual game master.
He's going up against Vin Diesel.
Oh, yeah,
that's true. But that won't be for another couple of weeks. But yeah, we will soon find out exactly how he ranks in the gaming world. I think one of the first tricks that I found, it's so common sense, and yet a lot of people, at least that I've talked to, don't do it.
You think that you should tell them whatever they want to hear, and when it's time to role play, you just run whatever you want?
No. Actually, what I found worse instead is ask them.
No.
Before you run the game, sit down and just ask them, and with no context and no pretense, just sit down and say, what is it that you like or you would want out of this game?
What do you mean with no context or pretext?
Well, like, what I mean,
you don't have a knife in your hand and say, yeah, what do you want in this game, zombies? Huh?
What I mean is, like, if you sit down and
I've seen GMs basically do that.
If you sit down and say, like, do you want a lot of combat in this game? Well, you're going to get an answer to that question because you've already kind of put them in this mindset of, you know, thinking along the lines you've set forth. Whereas if you just sit down and say, what do you want out of this game? They may tell you things that you would have never even thought to ask about.
I have to say that is the... I agree with that. I totally agree with it. And all jokes aside, that is the very logical and academic answer. That's what people... And we should go for as a group. But I don't think that's how it works. Because I've seen in the past how it actually works is we're in the middle of a game, or at the... Hopefully, if this all goes true, we're nearing the end of a game. And somebody mentions a different game. Hey, you know what? We haven't played Turtles Through Time in a while. Wouldn't that be cool? And then the guy next to him was like,
I actually played Turtles in Time a couple weeks ago.
I could play a Aardvark. And then, you know, people get talking, they get going, and the GM looks at it, and he's like, and the GM makes a decision if he's not in on this already. He makes a decision of, I could either push this boulder down the hill with a little tap and get it rolling, or I can try and derail it right now before I lose control.
Well, let me stress, I'm talking about asking them before the first game.
Before the first game ever.
I'm not talking... Okay.
That's a good topic, Chad, but it's not this one.
I'm not talking about... Well, I see where Chad's coming from, because you're right. Mid-game, asking them that could derail a lot of things.
And it does.
I mean, more like...
And it has.
We've all agreed that we are going to play whatever game. We're all going to play D&D. So we're never even played the first game yet. And I shoot out an email to everyone separately saying, hey, what would you like to see in this game? And just see what kind of things they tell me. Second thing I do is look at them as people. I mean, you know what? I'd assume the people you're gaming with are probably your friends. You have at least some limited contact with them. Okay, everyone, but Adam here is a friend. You have some limited contact with them. And look at the things that they're interested in. And if you know that this person's interested in certain things or certain bits of mythology or certain kinds of movies or certain kinds of books, I mean, you can harvest that for a gold mine of, okay, we'll do the horror thing, or we'll do this, or we'll include this particular enemy, or we'll include running gun battles, or...
That has a danger, too. When hard gaze shows up on the scene in your fantasy world, you've gone too far.
Okay, yeah, there's certainly a ridiculous outer boundary to this that has to be observed, but...
Well, like, and also you can tie in things that you know about the person, like you're saying, but like if I know Dan's scared of spiders, bringing that up in a game...
Perfect horror hook.
Absolutely, absolutely. Or if, you know, John's a big softy, and he absolutely loves kids.
Well, I'm scared of spiders.
Make a kid victim to get John to buy in more.
Well, Dan's scared of spiders, and I'm scared of D&D novels. So we run the R.A. Salvatore Dro stuff, and everyone is terrified.
Or reaching for the barf bag. Either one. I mean, it works either way. I found that when I run a game, you know, I have a pretty diverse group. I do the exact same thing. I look at what people want to play. Now, I had it lucky in that I was showing people how to play. The majority, not all of it, but the majority of my group had never played before. So I was the GM, and I pretty much said, okay, this is what you guys are going to play. This is what I'm going to run. I mean, they didn't have an opinion either way. And I would kind of pick the overall frame of what I would run, but a lot of the things within my game would be tailored to the people. Like Adam jokingly said earlier, you know, you throw in zombies, Melina's happy. Guess what? There were a lot of zombies in my game. Yes, there's a lot of undead. I throw in some political intrigue or some interpersonal intrigue that hooks both John and Adam. You know, I put in Phil. I throw him, if he does good and he actually role plays, I let him kill somebody. You know, it's, you just,
you know what? That's the totality of the reward for Phil.
Pretty much.
I think the one thing you've got to watch for when you do that, and this is actually a mistake that I have made even up until very recently, is as you do that, be careful not to spotlight that. Yeah. When you're catering to a particular person, okay. Granted, that person's like, if Phil loves combat, which he does, so we have a game with lots of combat.
Oh, yeah, you can't do the whole game like right. that. I have done games like that. I have been in games like that. And not even with the combat thing. It could be the political intrigue thing. You know, Melina's a great role player. I really enjoy playing with Melina. She is not into the political intrigue of this guy hates this guy, who likes this guy, who might be a spy for this, who does it. She doesn't care.
Right.
And when I'm running that with, you know, I got Adam, I got John, I got Phil in on it, I got Dawn in on it. Yeah, Melina is just really on the periphery of that. And that sort of thing, that whole, like the political thing, or you can use other examples too, really eats up a lot of spotlight because A, you know, the politics take up a lot of plot, and B, it involves multiple people.
And C, the players are picking up the football and going back and forth with each other, and the GM doesn't know when to stop it. Because it's all internal.
Also, right. You set yourself up for a danger because, for example, if I'm running a D&D game where R.A. Salvatore is the main enemy.
Not his books, not characters, the author himself.
Personally, and I like tie him in real heavily to John's character just to scare the crap out of him.
And I suddenly go to Rome.
And then, John suddenly goes to Rome.
Then everybody's got R.A. Salvatore in it, and everyone's like, hey, what's up? And
so we have to turn him into a Drider.
He's like, hey.
Hey, I made Drider. I made this drow.
All right.
I'm all right, Salvador. Think sounds I'm like a that. Multi-million but that's okay. best-selling author.
Another thing to worry about when playing
okay. Oh my God.
We need an Ari Salvatore puppet.
No, we need to put him on we need to make the power 17.
Ooh,
I think.
We might. Oh, that doesn't work with a bracket.
Yeah, I know.
No. All right, whatever.
Sorry, Ari. You can't get in. Maybe the next league
round,
we do.
Ari Salvatore will be the commissioner of one of the leagues.
Yeah. The press pass already got kicked off the list.
Yes,
so
it did.
I want to take this topic in a slightly different direction, though.
Away from R.A. Salvador?
Away
you
from R.A. Salvador.
Bastard.
Yeah, excuse me. The apology will come in 2 weeks. But this sounds a little bit arrogant or elitist or condescending, but grooming your player characters, though, you can also tailor the game, because certain players that are, shall we say, hard-assed or some, you know, have other hang-ups as players, you can groom as a GM to some extent by customizing the game content. For example, if we had Phil or someone else who shall not be mentioned, and we made like humility or like you know, pacifism or something like that, those guys get the spotlight and they get all the gals and everything in the game. We might be helping to groom our players away from that.
You know,
hard-ass edge.
I tried that with Phil too. I mean, I like everybody else would do like this deep role playing, and they would get rewards out of it, not necessarily XP, but they would get, you know, they would advance through the plot, and they would get, you know, fame of some sort, whatever. However I was doing it that particular instance. And Phil would be like, oh, blah, I'm just going to punch the guy. And he would get punished. He would get thrown in jail or beat up. And you know what? That is a great idea. Phil never got the hint.
No.
There's probably an IQ requirement here.
No. The problem here is that you're trying to change people.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
You can change play styles a little, I think. But
But why do you have to though?
I think that gets into a whole thing of, well, our playstyle is better.
You should just I love him enough to change the elitism and the condescending arrogance that I was referencing.
Yeah. Let me put to you this way. I think I've changed my play. I think I've changed you. You know, as egotistical as that sound, I have drawn role playing out of a group of people who didn't role play. And gee, I'm just this wonderful GM. No, no, it's just that it's what I wanted.
It's just because it's I taught you to.
Yeah. through your wonderful Ravenloft sessions.
Oh, the pain stick.
But out of the group, because that's what I want. I want the deep role playing. So I create situations where I would draw that role playing out. And it was, you know, small degrees of shift there. It wasn't huge 360s and stuff. But
yes, it was sucked like poison from the wound, because that's what it was.
But you liked it.
No, you just invited me to show up to your games, and I did my high school theater voice impressions, and
John was my best player.
Sparked the drama,
absolute
all around.
Best player in the world, because John understood.
It was the cocaine.
Yeah, and he brought the cocaine. He's like, "Hey, Chad, pregame toot," and I'm like, "Well, hey."
It's like John Granite's version of an Indo. He's got Swisher Sweet laced with cocaine.
He held it up and he's like, "Yeah, plus four sword, I think." I'm like, oh, "Okay, John."
Fear and Loathing in Gondor. That was the first campaign.
We were in Bat Country. Yes. We're on our cart.
We can't stop here. This is Weathertop.
Giddy up.
As a cleric, I advise you to take a hit from that small blue potion in the bag.
It's a cure moderate. Find the largest crossbow you could possibly find.
If we go at 10 leagues, but the horse flies an hour, it'll be a miracle if we go there in time.
So you realize next episode has to be Just Say No.
No, next episode is Fear and Loathing in Helm's Deep.
Yes. Next episode is the electric cure moderate wounds acid test.
I think in addition to customizing the game itself, you also have to look at customizing the setting. For example, and I'm gonna use Mike as an example here, but I agree with him, so I could be using me as an example here too. Mike is very, very uncomfortable gaming around people that are non-gamers.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah, and
so am I.
If part of customizing the experience may not just be picking the right kind of game or having the right kind of plot or having the right kind of enemy.
Tie your wife up and throw her in the closet before the game.
That's different role playing.
That's a different kind of role playing.
Is this
playing,
why your girlfriend comes to every game?
I shall not speak on that subject.
Mike, look in your eyes.
What's
I
good
wish
for
we
the
had a video.
Goose, not good for the gander.
But if you've got somewhat, you know, if you've got a house.
My woman's a gamer.
If you know there's that one house where someone is always lurking about making somebody else in the group.
Why do you have a house that someone lurks in? It's creepy as hell.
I love how it's like the popular people have their stereotypes about gamers, but gamers have the same thing. That one non-gamer who's lurking
around. You know, that square with the job who shaves.
Showers.
Oh, no.
But seriously, if you know there's an environment where one of the people just isn't comfortable because of a person, because of allergies, because of a pet, because of whatever, then part of customizing game experience may be making sure that you don't game at that place or you do some things to accommodate that.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Yeah. AKA courtesy.
Yeah.
AKA or, Denny's.
Yeah.
Why would you game in Denny's? What possible appeal would there be to gaming?
Because of the Grand Slam breakfast.
Great food at a great value.
The Grand Slam slugger, man.
Nothing you don't have to call it Denny's when you're in character. You can call it the Purple Hog or whatever you want to.
Besides,
wench, I shall have a mead of the orange juice.
Besides, what better way to get on a first name basis with the police?
Serving wench, give me a shank of the all-meat American skillet.
I say Denny's, though, I do like those giant orange juice bongs that they serve.
I think they're called carafes, but what are you going to do?
Scratch out carafe and write bong on the menu. That's what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm. I need a stim pack of Denny's orange juice carafe.
Ah, that's the stuff.
There's also a tiny danger, well, actually a very large danger, in customizing the game of breaking the integrity of the game world for everyone else. Let's keep beating up on Phil because we're there. One time he wanted a train that flew on balloons.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. No.
It was perfect.
This is a gaming story. It was the perfect seed.
Okay. Chad usually is the one that will say, okay, throw Phil his bone, whereas I'm usually the one that will say, no, that's stupid. He can't do it. We agreed in this case. He could not have the train dirigible.
Yeah.
We were actually playing Skies of Glass. We were actually calling it Skies of Glass.
Yeah. It was a brilliant, absolutely brilliant thing. His character, he wanted to be a tinker, a scavenger sort of thing. In the
Which is the other thing he does besides heavy weapons guy.
Yeah.
Tinker.
He has to maintain his weapons.
Yeah. A tinker scavenger in the post-apocalyptic world. I think I might have told this story before, so I'll keep it real short.
Right.
He wanted when he first said, I want a train. Okay, you know, there's train tracks around. Sure, you find a train yard. That's fine. And it's like, oh, dude, I got this great plan. And he drew it all out, made diagrams, plans. It was insane. He wanted a dirigible with a locomotive train attached to the bottom. It's
I'm
flying
pretty sure
train.
He wanted to be able to drive it with no tracks and probably amphibiously, too.
Yeah.
And he wanted to drive
it was, you know, armored, covered with guns, yeah, all that
just
sort of
to
thing.
Add,
yeah, was it the Back to the Future 3?
Future train.
Here's what I did with it. It like, I conformed to the player. I let him have it. Well, let me put it this way. I let him think he had it. All the other players, NPCs, he saw himself as completely sane, absolutely fine, flying train, perfectly great. Everyone looked at him and was like, you are insane. You are a nut. And all the NPCs and all the PCs treated him like he was absolutely insane. And it added a dimension to his character that he didn't intend. It was great.
That he didn't intend? Phil
ever notice.
Yeah, didn't notice, didn't acknowledge, and
that goes back to shaping your players.
It was
I
the
like
most. It was the most in character, insane person I have ever had in a game.
Ignorance does not equal in character.
In this case,
one's
it
named
did.
Jules, and here's Vern.
So basically, you're saying customize the game to the character by punishing the character.
It wasn't punishment.
It wasn't punishment.
Well, and you can over-customize, allowing...
Yeah, that was what I was saying.
Oh, no, let me throw this out on the table. He had a train, and he had a dirigible. Neither one of them ever worked. Okay. But he was constantly working on it. And I would have him make rolls, and he would roll, and I would say, you failed when the dice occupied the space between his hand and the table, touching neither. I declared you fail the roll, and
see,
he
that,
never
that's,
noticed.
That's too much DM cheating for me.
That's not DM cheating, I don't think at all.
No, look
the,
at
the dice haven't even settled yet.
I could throw balloons on a train downtown at the shipyard or the rail yard right now. It's St. Louis. They're sitting
he
around.
He could take all...
They have no chance of actually flying.
He could take all 200 dice in my dice bowl, ranging from D4s to D30s, and dump them all out. And count up every single number, and he'll still fail at it because you can't make a flying train.
Should a 20 be an automatic success regardless of
the
price?
No,
I'm with Chad on this one.
I am too.
It's not an issue of GM cheating. It's an issue of impossibility. I'm not.
Well, then why lead the player on, though? Because then it's just a waste of time.
We didn't. We told him it wasn't a waste of time.
I told him. He's insane.
It became a role-playing thing.
His character's insane.
Well, I'm not a huge train enthusiast, but my dad is. He grew up right by a train yard in Memphis. And he told me a little factoid once, and I'm going to get the depth wrong, but with most modern trains, the bed of the base of the rail car is something like 1 to 3 feet of solid concrete. That's what they pour down there is cement. You are not going to make this fly.
Right.
Period.
But he just had it in his mind. And you know what? It made him happy. He played a really in-character insane guy, whether he had no intention of doing so. And it was great.
No, you have nothing.
There's nothing you can add to that.
No, there is nothing I can add to that. So, you know what's funny is probably the only one thing that we really honestly do owe an apology for is all the things we've said about Phil.
And that is probably
we've gamed
true.
Like once with him.
I've never gamed with him. We're going to have a bonus episode where you know, all we do is apologize to Phil.
I got
to
say
we
this.
Need to have the Phil praise episode.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. I mean, I know Adam will agree with it. And
no,
John
don't start praising him now. We need to save that for a bonus episode.
All right. Well, then we will tune out here and catch you guys next time.
See ya.
Love you, Phil.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2007, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.